later. And this effective field theory approach, which is very well known in the framework of particle physics, was originally introduced by Walter Goldberger and Ira Rothstein. They were the first to apply all this formalism to classical general relativity. And but in general, this approach is, can be equally well applied to any other classical setup where, say, there are two or more scales, widely separated scales in the problem. So the outline of my talk is the following. I will start from introducing the main idea of classical effective field theory, and then I will proceed to examples. So first example has to do with post-Newtonian approximation, because it's now a very popular subject. People compute post-Newtonian corrections because of all these detectors which are on the way. And the simplest stuff to compute in this post-Newtonian approximation is the so-called improved Einstein-Infeld-Hoffmann Lagrangian. Okay, it's Einstein-Infeld-Hoffmann Lagrangian. Why it's improved, I will show you as I present the equation. Because it is most, this is the most economizing way, I guess, to derive this post-Newtonian Einstein-Hoffmann Lagrangian. Now the second example has to do with caged black holes. Okay, it's the problem of academic interest. I mean, because it's not so simple to detect such small black holes, and they have this all the setup has to use compact directions, dimensions, and so on. but still, it's fascinating stuff. So, and I will finish with the results and then some open questions. Now, in the case of caged black holes, I will show you the derivation of Chu, Walter, and Ira. They are not the first to consider this setup. It was studied by a big list of people, but they were the first to compute this system in the framework of effective field theory approach. And again, this, to my opinion, this is the most economizing way to derive thermodynamics of such a system. Okay, so the main idea, as I told already, the main idea of applying this effective field theory classical setups belongs to Walter and Ira. They published it a couple of years ago. And the key insight that made this classical effective field theory possible is the following. Let us consider some compact object, a specific black hole, but it can be some massive, object. And denote by RS the Schwarzschild radius of this system, or in the case of just compact object, it can be some geometrical size of the object. And if, in case you are interested in dynamics, length scales, which are much bigger than this, the size of the compact dimension, then actually we have two widely separated scales, and it makes sense to define the effective action of the system by integrating out short degrees of freedom, because, or heavy modes in the language of particle physics. Now, this object is pure quantum object, I mean, the passing control, but it also includes classical physics. So if we think about it as sum over diagrams, then it means that we have to sum only over classical diagrams or three-level diagrams. And it will be explicitly shown in our further discussion. So now, what are the properties of this effective action? So first of all, it can be expressed as an infinite tower of local operators. So this is the bulk action. And these local operators encode all the information about the black hole, and they are concentrated on the wavelength of the black hole, because if you are far enough from the black hole, the reading order is just point-like object. Okay, but it is not point-like. I mean, it's not point-like particle. It has some size. So all this information about formations and etc. are encoded, might be encoded in these operators. And in general, as we know, in effective field theory, we have infinite number of such operators. Now, the UV dependence, or dependence on the short plane scale on the radial Schwarzschild, it actually appears directly in the Wilson coefficients Ci. So Ci are the only coefficients which scale with RS. So if the full theory is unknown or strongly coupled, okay, so we don't know how to integrate, how to do this path integral, still the theory must manifest itself at low energies as an effective action of this form. So we just have to write down something very general, and it should take into account all the information about the system.
So sorry, at this level, the G bar is it known or?
It is not known actually. You can perform variation and get the equations of motion for this G bar. Now, if the symmetries of the full theory, in our case, the symmetry of the full theory just general covariance. So, and the effective action must respect the symmetry. Okay, so we have to write down general expression, but it must respect the symmetries of the our original theory. Okay, and basically all this has to do with the decoupling statement, which says actually the following, that by writing down effective action containing the more general set of model operators consistent with the symmetries of the full theory, we are necessarily accounting for UV physics in a completely model independent way. To fix this Wilsonian coefficients, we have to do a kind of matching procedure, and then these coefficients will depend on the precise full theory. So let us proceed to examples. So the first one will be called Newtonian approximation, and short explanation of this post-Newtonian approximation. We consider two bodies for simplicity. We take two identical black holes and RS Schwarzschild radius, and capital R, you know, the typical distance between the bodies. And we want to consider the situation when RS is much smaller than R. So if the bodies are in spiraling, okay, they meet gravitational waves, and the lowest order such a system is described by Newtonian physics. So we want to compute corrections from which GR introduces to this system. So this is called the post-Newtonian approximation. So what I want to demonstrate now is just derivation of this first correction to the Newtonian action, and this first correction is called Einstein-Hilbert potential. Why to compute this? Because first of all, we want to study the dynamics of this system, and it turns out that the gravitational radiation appears at 2.5 is the post-Newtonian, 2.5 is the order of the small parameter. Our small parameter is RS over R here. So if you want to consider your physics below this 2.5 order, then actually neglect the radiation and the system is conservative, so you can ask what kind of Lagrangian describes the system. Okay. Goldberger and Rothstein in the original paper showed how to derive this Lagrangian in the framework of effective field theory, and here I want to show you how to yet improve this derivation. Okay. So by real theorem you have the following relation. Actually, the kinetic energy, okay, this where scales, I mean, the same is of the same order as Gm over R, and Gm is just proportional to the radius Schwarzschild radius. So if Rs over R is small, then this where B is also small. So we have, we are taking care of this, not about the visible dynamics, and each such order Rs over R or V square is called one of Newtonian order. Okay. Now, what are the typical lenses in the problem? So we have short lens, which is just Schwarzschild radius. We have a potential lens, I mean those modes which scale with R, and the final lens has to do is related to these two, and it is just R over V. This is the periodic evolution of the system, and since V is small, this radiation length is much bigger than any other distal lenses. Okay, and the corresponding fields we denote by G, which corresponds to the short lengths. H, capital H, will denote potential field, and this field is actually V, because on the scales which correspond to R, we are far enough from the horizon, so H capital H is actually small. And radiation field, lowercase h. So, since we are not interested in radiation, okay, which I just want to demonstrate, you understand the Hofmann Lagrangian derivation, I will neglect it in what follows. Okay? And what actually, to get to Lagrangian of the system, what we have to do is to integrate out these capital H's in the potential forms. Okay? So what, how do we proceed? So first we integrate short degrees of freedom, and it means that we replace our compact objects, our black holes, by this effective action. Now, to leading order, as I said, this is just point-like masses, point-like objects. So, and this is mb tau, this is the mass term which corresponds to each of these black holes. And in general, we have infinite number of operators, but these operators which appear here are not relevant to the Einstein offer. Actually, they are very well suppressed. Huh?
How do you then consider the motion of the two objects around each other? Like, this section should just describe two point-like black holes.
Right now, it's two point-like black holes coupled by long wavelengths, by H's, by these capital H's which scale with R. So,
but this system doesn't know, this section at the moment doesn't know that these black holes are rotating around each other. Right? Because that will be the next term in your action.
But you can, I mean, this is something general, like in electrodynamics, say, where you write down the action. You have F squared for the strength tensor, and this is an analog of Hilbert, Einstein-Hilbert, right? And you have also U, A mu dx mu for each object. So this is, at this point, at this level, this is still, I mean, this is still general. I don't consider, this can describe any situation, for example, in particular, can describe scattering of two black holes.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's pretty general right now. But I will narrow the discussion to the case, to this particular case. Okay, I just want to present the steps. So right now, in particular, it includes this system. But it includes much more, I believe.
But you can also include the next term, which will capture this angular momentum. It will couple to the Christoffel.
You mean the angular momentum of this of the
yeah.
spinning part? Ah, that's right. That's right. This is what Raphael Porte did in his work. He considered also spin effects. Okay, but for simplicity, the most simple, as I said, stuff to derive is Einstein-Hilbert-Hofmann, and Einstein-Hilbert-Hofmann doesn't take into account this spin degrees of freedom. Okay.
So one question. So if G bar is a general metric, so the first term is just the standard one. So the second one, how do you add it in? I mean,
you mean this one? Okay.
So I thought you. I was
this is formal. I mean, you have some long wavelengths G. Okay, you integrate it out this short wavelengths, and you are left with some piece of the metric which scales with this R, and which contains degrees of freedom which scale with this R or bigger scales. Okay, and this is formal decomposition. So you can, you have some function. Okay, and you can decompose this function into frequencies which scale with this R and other frequencies. So this is just formal decomposition.
So wait,
I'm not claiming that solves.
No, but I'm confused. So I have a metric. But the G bar, you told me, is a general metric, right?
No, G bar, right now, here, G bar contains, I mean, I integrated out already short degrees of freedom. So okay, so here, G bar contains only piece of the metric which scales with R.
So at this point, you have to have chosen a particular gauge where you can make sense of that.
Okay, right. You're right. Actually, to compute something with this section, I have to gauge fixed. That's right.
But the Schwarzschild particles are collapsed to the test particles, basically, not down to mass and solar in detail. This is the action.
Yes, sure.
Action as you put in for a test particle. Mm-hmm.
So these, yeah, I don't see that solving the problem. So I think that in order to say, okay, this is a long mode and this is short mode, I have to be able to distinguish these two. I mean, unless they fix the case, I cannot say that.
But short mode contains only in this piece of the action.
Right, so but then what I don't know how you do it is
I don't know. I don't know either. No one knows because at the level of short wavelengths, the theory is strongly coupled. So you can do it actually. At least I don't know how to do it, how to do the integral explicitly. But and this is exactly the use of effective field theory decoupling state, which states that just write down the general expression, the most general expression, which is compatible with your synthesis of the full theory. And such action has to, I mean, takes into account all the dynamics.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But I think Luis is saying, as a mathematical exercise, in some strange gauge, there might be things that look like short wavelength modes that really aren't. Is that what you're saying, or?
Well, yeah, so I'm thinking, say, if I were to solve, if I started with this general action first,
yeah,
and I'm thinking, okay, this would solve everything, and then I'm trying to go from there to here, there should be some procedure that tells me. In order to make that separation, I need to somehow say, okay, these are short modes, these are long modes, and I don't see how you do it unless you have to.
Okay.
But you're saying is I write the most formal way, and then things somehow magically will fall into place. So
yes.
I'm going to be working on that.
Okay, but in the quantum field theory, I mean, when you apply a quantum field theory, and decoupling theory, then you also think that this is the kind of metric that you, in this way...
Yeah, but in quantum field theory, you have this preferred metric, but then you can do a lot of things here. So here you have to somehow still tell me what is the preferred
metric. But still, if you think about the metric field just as a field in quantum field theory...
Yeah, but I cannot.
Okay, so as a second step, this is an improvement actually relative to what Goldberger and Rothstein did. We introduce the following change of variables. Okay, this is just change of variables, like change of from Cartesian coordinates to polar coordinates. This is the same because if you this is kind of a convenient parameterization of the metric. In this case, G is decomposed into gamma, A, and phi, and the number of degrees of freedom on both sides is the same. Phi is 1, A is 3, so 4, and gamma 6, so 10. Okay, so this is just convenient decomposition. Why this convenient decomposition? Because we know that in this case, time is singular out in the sense that, and actually time is singled out in the whole problem because time evolution is very slow. Okay. Now what happens? The Hilbert, okay, this is just mp tau where we just substituted instead of g in terms of a and phi. This is a precise expression for d tau, and this does denote other operators in the world line, okay? And the bulk action actually has several pieces. So one piece, this is an exact bulk action within the stationary approximation. That is, if you assume that your fields are time independent, again, then as usual, like in Kaluza-Klein induction, we get dilaton, okay, gravitomagnetic field strength tensor, and reduced Ricci scalar. This is the standard Anton's Kaluza-Klein. Since our fields are time dependent, but weakly time dependent, we have a bunch of other terms in this bound action. So one of them, for example, is this. Okay, but in general we have many more. And all of these terms, since R originally has two derivatives, okay, so special derivatives are compactified in this expression. And each time, each term which contains at least one time derivative sits here. And why we take this tail out? Because special derivative, since special distances scale is R, it means that special derivatives scale is 1 over R. On the other hand, time scales as R over V, so it means that time derivative scales as V over R. So each time derivative will contain extra power of V, and so these terms are suppressed relative to the leading order terms. Okay, thank you. So they reveal just perturbation to the main bulk action. Okay. So I included here only one term because this is the only term which will contribute to the Einstein input problem. Okay. So the next step, we decompose again the metric, our metric field into two parts. One part, namely gamma, A, and phi, scale is R, and the rest, gamma bar, A bar, phi bar, belong to asymptotic field or radiation modes. Okay, and I will suppress this gamma bar, A bar, and phi bar because they are irrelevant again to the Einstein field Hofmann or Grandin. So, and right now we want to integrate out gamma and phi in order to reduce our action, which actually has to do with two particles coupled, weakly coupled by this potential modes, to just action which contains only particle degrees of freedom. And this is exactly the Einstein program. So since fields are weak, we expand our bulk action in the weak field approximation. So this is a pi dot square theorem which reveal perturbation. This is F square from the previous transparency, and this is the dilaton. And gamma, I will show it explicitly, is not relevant to the Einstein bottom. Okay. So now you read off the standard Feynman rules. So this is this delta function. Okay, so these are propagators. Okay, so this is the delta function. Delta function appears here because we take time derivative as a perturbation. Okay, so all modes propagate instantaneously through time. Okay, so this is the origin of the delta function. This is a standard propagator, and dashed line will represent propagator of the A field, and this is written in Lorentz gauge. Okay, vector gauge case. Okay, and the bulk phi dot square, the bulk correction to the bulk action will be denoted just by line with max to the cross. Okay. So now we do the same with point particle part. Okay, we expand. This is just expansion of the detail in terms of A, phi, and gamma in both big field and small velocities. Okay, these are just several terms. So, and as usual, we get, you see that mv square over 2 is just a standard kinetic theorem. This is correction to the kinetic theorem, but we get also couplings of our fields to the mass. Okay, In particular, this coupling, M5, will be denoted by such a vertex, okay? So this double line represents a given motion of the black hole, because we now integrate out just few degrees of freedom, so motion of our particle is fixed, okay? And V is some given function, unknown function, but given. So next, coupling is represented by this picture. Okay, but we have to remember that now vertex contains also one power of V. And okay, this is the same as this picture, but with V squared in the vertex. And this last term is represented by double lines going out of the broad line. And so integrating out this few degrees of freedom is tantamount to summing over all diagrams, first of all connected diagrams, okay, with the only fields which run in the diagram. I mean, with phi A and phi A are the only fields which run inside the diagram. So these are the diagrams. So, okay, this is just the leading order kinetic term. Okay. Now, this diagram, this H diagram, consists of two such vertices. Okay, so only and phi runs here. Now, this term, and as I will show, this is just Newtonian potential. It's easy to show. Okay, so this term is just a correction to the kinetic energy, V squared. So each V squared, remember that this is just one post-Newtonian order. So this term is one order down relative to the leading order term. And now, in addition, we have some reason. Okay, it should be double line here. Okay, double line. Okay, so we have extra four diagrams. All of them are built from these pieces, okay? And for example, this diagram, you see explicitly that it has V squared relative to this diagram. So it is down by one power of four, post-Newtonian approximation. So this diagram, which corresponds to the exchange of the gravitomagnetic field, is also down by one post-Newtonian order relative to this Newtonian diagram, because we have V, extra V in the vertex here and here. Okay, this diagram has two derivatives with respect to time, k phi dot square. This is just manifestation of phi dot square. So we have, again, each time derivative has V, so we get V square again here. Now, this diagram is a bit different from these three diagrams, because it doesn't have explicit powers of V in it. Yet, even, as I will show you, this one represents Newtonian potential. Okay, so in this case, we have two Newtonian potentials. Okay? So each one of the Newtonian potentials, according to the trivial theorem, is scales as V squared. So again, this diagram is of the same order as these three diagrams, and thus it is down by 1 bn relative to the leading order diagram. Okay. Yeah, let me convince, just because this is one-line computation, why this is Newtonian potential. It's very easy, after all. So we have exchange of phi. Now, each such vertex is just M1 dt1 phi evaluated at the position of the first particle. So this is first vertex. Second vertex is M2 dt2 phi evaluated at the raw line of the second particle. So we contract these two phis and replace it by up to constant phi. Okay, so 4 pi g delta t1 minus t2 times integral d3k over k squared ei k r. Okay, r now corresponds to the, this is capital R, the radius vector between the particles. So this delta kills one of times, so we get m1, m2, 4 pi g integral dt, say t1 is t now, and this integral just Fourier transform of k squared. So just by dimensional analysis, you get 1 over r okay, from this integral, because it scales as k, k cube over k squared, 1 over r, and there is some numerical factor, which it turns out to be 4 pi. So 4 pi cancels, and you get m, g m1 and 2 over r in exact Newtonian potential. So, so now, as I said, this is a Newtonian action, and this part of the action corresponds to the Einstein union of Lagrangian. And these are the results. I mean, if you look, if you open the original paper of Einstein union and Hofmann, your Lagrangian looks like sum of these terms. Okay, and now each term corresponds to definite diagram, Feynman diagram. Okay, and now the interpretation of which terms, or which of these terms, is also very clear. For example, this term corresponds to the fact that kinetic energy gravitates. Okay, so this is a correction to the action due to this simple fact. Now, this diagram corresponds to the retardation effect. Okay, because signals are not instantaneous, but we have to consider the correction. Now, this diagram reveals a kind of Biot-Savart law in gravity, okay, because it is the exchange of vector mode, okay, and this is the same like in electrodynamics. Okay, when particles moves, it creates a vector potential, and this vector potential exerts force on other moving particles. So this is exactly this term. And the final term represents just the fact that the potential energy gravitates. Okay, so we have Newtonian potential. Say one line is Newtonian potential, and this Newtonian potential creates gravitational field and exerts force on the other particle. Okay, so this is why we say that it is the most economizing way to derive Einstein Hofmann, because each term corresponds to definite physical process, so you can't reduce it more. And each such diagram actually is a computation, which such diagram is a one-line computation. So you get immediately the result. Okay, so this is Lagrangian. And what kind of improvement we have by reducing over time by introducing, by applying this change of variables, okay? Actually, the payoff of dimensional, of this kind of dimensional reduction, I mean, when you move from G bar to gamma A and phi, is that triple vertex, such a vertex, okay, gets eliminated from the discussion. Okay? So you don't need to compute, to deal with all this index structure, because actually triple vertex in case of gravity is pretty big. So you don't need to cope with all these indices, and you don't need to compute this classical one-loop diagram. Why this classical? Because remember, you do not associate propagators with this double line. You just given motion of our external source.
But had you not done that separation, you would have obtained the same answer.
Okay, Walter and Dyer, this is what they did. I mean, they computed, they didn't reduce over, didn't do this kind of change of variables, but still they computed the Lagrangian and reproduced the result, but they have to cope with this deep overlap.
Did you eliminate it, or is it just that you've pushed diagrams like that off to a higher order?
Actually, you get, that's why. Actually, you push, for example, we still have this gamma, right? So we still have this triple vertices. But okay, this is the expression for GitHub, and we use parameterization in this particular plugin. Okay? So gamma has to do with special indices. Okay? So you get gamma ij is coupled to vi vj. So explicitly you have already v square in the vertex. So you consider this diagram, okay, with gamma running inside, you get v square here, and v square here. So you already at the 3pn order, and this propagator is an extra order, so you get 4pn. Thus, in our change of variables, you're right, it actually pushed these vertices up in the orders, and actually, first time you have to deal with complex complex structure, complex index structure is only 4pn.
No, because isn't that strange that you had something that if you didn't do the change, you would have been a V4 ordered, now it went all the way to V6?
I mean, I didn't lose any information.
No, I know.
Still, I have other degrees of freedom which are coupled in a bit different ways than original H's. But rather than computing this kind of diagrams, you replaced, I mean, actually, you replaced this diagram by other diagrams, which are simpler, in the sense that you have to propagate on the scalar of the freedom of x.
Yeah, but then they would, but they are simpler, and at the same time they are lower order, so that's what...
Why is there lower? I mean, still, you also have, I mean...
Or otherwise you make evident, yeah, is that what you're saying, that if you haven't done this change, you wouldn't have realized right away that some of these contributions didn't play any role to the order of the care. Is that the first thing?
For me, this is like the same. This is the same situation with integrals. I mean, if you want to evaluate some integral, you can evaluate it without change of variables, or you can change variables. Once you change variables, you can, for example, replace your, I don't know, three-dimensional integral by one-dimensional, right? I mean, for example, some spherical. Function spherical, so you just reduce your d-dimensional integral into just one integral over.
No, yeah, that's
so
that's
this
fine.
Is the same in some sense.
No, but I'm thinking about the order conflict. If something
is missed, no.
Another way, maybe ask the question in Ira and Walter's calculation, that diagram that you show, that contributes at many different orders. In the post-Newtonian approximation.
This diagram?
Yeah.
No, this diagram contributes only to the Eisenman-Hoffman-Lagrangian.
No, did they only calculate that part of the diagram, or that's the total contribution?
No, the total contribution of this diagram. I mean, they evaluated this
okay.
this whole diagram. But because when you work with H's, okay, you have, when you work with these H's, it says, let us set V to zero, okay? Still you have, okay, atom U mu plus H U mu times X dot mu, okay, square root.
Right.
Okay. So if you set X now to zero, this is the leading order contribution, you get m square root of 1 plus h 0, 0, right? So if you expand your vertex, in our case it is just m5, okay?
Yeah.
m5, in their case this is mh 0, 0,
right.
Over 2,
yeah.
Okay, so they have 0 vertices, so they have to consider, I mean, this is the general vertex in terms of h's, and they have to consider 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, contribution. Okay. I mean, when you put all the indices to be 0, 0, external indices. And they have some, and they get some diagram because of this. Okay. In our case, because we do change of variables and it's the same in the reduced method, we also do kind of variable scaling. Okay. You get this diagram. The final action, bulk action, is quadratic in phis. Okay? So you don't have triple vertex with phis. you don't have, because the final bulk action is quadratic in phi. And this is why this diagram is a linear. Okay. So in general, if, for example, you get this phi cube vertex, then you get to compute the diagram as well. But the success of this change of variables is exactly the fact. The action in the scalar field is just quadratic.
Okay.
So let me proceed to another example. Okay, gauge black hole. So the system. So we consider d-dimensional space-time, and we compactify it in one dimension. And for simplicity, we take this manifold to be just a circle, so the simplest manifold. Okay. And so in the picture, bottom line and upper line are identified, and L is the size of the compact dimension. And we denote by Z coordinate. Z labels points along the compact dimension, and R labels the rest of the special coordinates. Okay, so if you consider black hole in such a configuration, in such a space-time, then this black hole is called H black hole, because it's caged in the compact dimension. And again, RS denotes Schwarzschild radius of such a black hole, and we want to consider the situation when RS is much less than L. Okay, then actually all this formalism is applicable. Okay, so okay, this system was considered by many people before the work of Chu, Goldberger, and Goldstein, and I mentioned their name because they were the first to consider this system in the framework of effect field theory. Okay, so they re-derived all known results, and they also succeeded to go one order beyond. So again, as a first step, we just integrate out RS, degrees of freedom, which scale is RS, and therefore we replace our black hole by an infinite, by an infinite tower of operators. Okay, the leading operator is again just a mass operator, but there are other operators which will be associated with deformation of the black hole due to compact dimension, etc. And for our needs, again, this finite size effects will be negligible. Now, this M0 has a very simple interpretation. If you be uncompactified space, if we just consider black hole in an uncompactified space, then this is just a standard Schwarzschild black hole, and this is the effective action for the d-dimensional Schwarzschild black hole. So this M0 is just the mass of the black hole in an uncompactified space. Or equivalently, this is the mass as measured by intermediate observer. I mean, an observer which sits somewhere in between RS and L. I mean, he's still far enough from the horizon, but this distance is much less than the size of the compact dimension. So the first approximation, he does not feel compactification effects, and this is the mass. But from the quantum field theory viewpoint, this is just bare mass. So for simplicity, we put our black hole in the origin of the system, that is X mu, which corresponds to the degrees of freedom, of the black hole parameterized in this way. So all the special coordinates are zero, and only time is non-zero. And therefore, d tau, for example, simplifies a lot. Just G0, 0 evaluated at the location of the black hole. Okay. So, and again, we decompose at this level the metric into two pieces. One piece will scale with as L. Okay. This H will scale with L. Okay. And H bar will correspond to the long wavelengths, degrees of freedom, or which measures the asymptotic observer. Okay, and since we want to compute thermodynamics of such system, we have to go to the asymptotics of this space, and therefore this tantamount to integrating out this short degrees of freedom, which scale is L. So the next step will be to integrate out, to use this action and to integrate out this lowercase h. Okay, so this is the definition of the effective action as measured by asymptotic observer. Okay, namely, depends only on h bar. And h is integrated out. So this is the effective action from the previous transparency. And in this case, since we are far enough from the horizon, all the fields are weak. So we can perform this integration perturbatively just by summing appropriate final diagonals. Okay. So the square root of G00, this is the expression for square root of G00, expansion in the weak field approximation. This is what Wold and Barra did originally, and Chu. But what kind of terms we are interested in this gamma effective? Actually, we are interested in two linear terms. In these two linear terms, linear in H0 bar 0 0 and in H bar ZZ. Why? Because if you want to consider the mass, so the energy momentum tensor is coupled to H mu, H bar mu mu, so 0 0 component will correspond to the energy, and ZZ component will correspond to the flux of the momentum in the ZZ direction. So this coefficient here is interpreted as tension, okay, force in that direction. Okay. So these are just tadpole diagrams. So just for visualization, if you want to compute second order result, I mean second order correction to the mass, M0 is just the leading order result, you just neglect from quantification. And now you want to consider corrections. So first correction, okay, I will show you in a moment that why this, I mean, our small parameter is RS over L, but the expansion parameter will be RS over L to G minus 3, and it's much less than 1. So to compute M and tau, we have to consider these tadpole diagrams where external leg corresponds to either H bar 0, 0 or H bar ZZ. And so this classical one loop diagrams, double line again, represents a given motion of the black hole. So it's not associated with any propagator. And so this is just, if you strip off this double line, you get three level diagrams. And so one loop will represent first correction in this small parameter, and two loop will correspond to the second correction in this small parameter. And these diagrams you build in exactly the same way as before in the post-Newtonian approximation. You expand your, as I showed you in previous transparency, you expand your point particle action, so you get couplings of mass to H00 only, because velocity is now zero. Okay. And in the bulk vertex, triple vertex here, or vortex vertex here, is just obtained by expansion of the bulk action of the of your Hilbert-Einstein action. And these eight diagrams were originally computed by Walter and Ira and Chu, isn't Chu, to reproduce. So they reproduced one loop diagrams. These diagrams reproduced previous result, and they went one order beyond, computed these six diagrams, which are not easy to compute, and obtained new result. So now I want to show you how this computation can be considerably improved. Okay, that is all this computation, after all, will be just one line computation. So this is an improved classical field theory. Okay, so at this, after you integrated out short degrees of freedom, we suggest to again apply this change of variables. Okay, because in this case, fields or everything is time independent. Okay, so since everything is time independent, you do not, your bulk action will be very simple. Okay, namely, first of all, due to staticity, namely due to the symmetry, he goes to minus key. In this case, A also is zero. If you want, this is the time of each choice. Okay, convenient gauges. So A is zero, and therefore the bulk action is this gets the following simple form. You have only Ricci-Skyer, reduced Ricci-Skyer, and the Dimoton, and that's all. Okay, and again, the action is quadratic in phi, but moreover, d tau, since it is square root of g00, and g00 is just e to phi, so you get very simple coupling of your black hole to the fields, namely, it contains only phi, okay, to leading form. If you consider this finite size effect, you have to introduce other fields as well, but as long as you neglect finite size effects, this is a simple coupling. So, as a second step, you again decompose your fields into short wavelength fields, namely those fields which scale with L, and long wavelength fields which correspond to the asymptotic observer, and you integrate out phi and gamma, I mean short wavelength field. So this is a diagrammatic representation of the mass before this deduction. This is just from the previous transparencies. Before you had to compute dark hole diagrams with the external leg being h bar 0, 0. Okay. So to leading order, you get m equals m0, and then you get correction. This is final corrections and correction. And if you want to consider some one order beyond, then you have to incorporate the six diagrams. Now, once you perform this dimensional reduction, h bar 0, 0 becomes 2 phi, so you get rather than this vertex, you get m phi bar. Okay. And this is just a couple of diagrams which will contribute to this term. Okay. So you see, this triple vertex is eliminated, so you have to compute only this one loop diagram. Okay. But still, things can be simplified more. Okay. So the second simplification is the following. We suggest improved calculational definition of M. Instead of computing dark hole diagrams, let us compute just vacuum diagrams, because vacuum diagrams has to do with energy. So, explanation why this definition of mass should be the same as the definition with one external leg is the following. First of all, we computed both dark holes and the vacuum, and we got an agreement. We got the same result. But the explanation, this main explanation is the form. By residual diffusion invariance, the mass term in the final action has to be of this form, just m, where m is the asymptotic mass times d tau, and d tau now has to be expressed in terms of asymptotic field and in terms of long wavelength fields only. So this is the expression for d tau. If you apply now reduction, this dimensional reduction over this g bar, then you get actually e to phi bar times dt, and if you expand e to phi bar, you get constant 1 plus phi bar. So this constant, which stands before phi bar, this overall constant, I mean, just constant coefficient, has to be the same. Okay. But in this case, if you are interested to compute first and second corrections to the mass, you have to sum only two diagrams. You have to compute only these two diagrams rather than eight in the original presentation of Walter and Ira and Chu. You have to compute only two diagrams, and actually you have to compute only one integral because this diagram is factorized. This is exactly what they mentioned in their original paper, that when they perform the computation, for some reason, all the double integrals, because they had two loops, all two integrals factorized. Okay? And here we see it explicitly in this case. And actually, the computation is also, again, something like one line, let me just show you. This is very easy. Sorry.
consider. So you can consider this diagram. M. So it equals to 1 over 2 because we have two vertices here. So we have M times 5, which is M times 5 evaluated as the region, times M times 5 evaluated as the region in two vertices. And you have to contract this way. So you get M square over 2. And this contraction is propagator evaluated at the same point. So in this case, first of all, we have d minus 1k over 2 pi d minus 1 times 1 over k squared. And k squared is just, you have to quantize in that direction, to Matsubarize in that direction. So we get plus 2 pi m over l squared due to periodicity, due to periodic boundary conditions. So this is a kind of integral is 1 over l. Okay. This is the integral which has to be evaluated. Okay. Now the only scale in the integral is l. Okay. So the overall scaling of this integral will be l to d minus 2 here, because we reduced over time. Okay, so we have as m squared over 2 times sum over n. Okay, we have d minus 1 directions, d minus 2 directions are not quantized, and 1 direction is quantized. So this is the correct expression. So the overall scaling of this integral is d minus l to d minus 3. 3 minus d4. Okay. Because this is just k to d minus 2 over k squared, so this is just k to d minus 4, and it means that we have 1 over l to d minus 4 and the extra l. Okay. So this is the scaling, and thus up to constant, which is not difficult to compute, you get m0. Okay. You get m0 times m0 over l to d minus 3. Okay. Now m0 scales as rs to gr units, rs to d minus 3 as well. Okay, so you get up to constant m0 times rs over l to d minus 3. Okay, this is a small parameter. Okay. So one loop, such loop introduces rs over l to d minus 3. And you have just to compute this constant coefficient. Okay, so see, I'm running out of time, so I will finish in a couple of minutes. So this is the result. This is the result. I mean, M0 equals to, is proportional to lambda, where lambda is this coefficient. Our small parameter is exact. This is the exact constant factor which you get, and it has very simple interpretation. If you substitute the explicit expression for the zeta function, then actually what is written here is just n l to d minus 3. Okay, and this is and r s to d minus 3 is replaced by 2 g m, where g m here is kind of generalization of Newton's constant. So actually, this is exactly the potential which is generated by images of the black hole in the governing space. Okay, so once you computed the m in terms of m0, if you want to eliminate this m0 from the game, you have to compute another thermodynamic quantity in terms of the same M0. So I will skip it because due to lack of time. So temperature is one of such quantities, because temperature at the horizon is simply related to the temperature at the asymptotics. The redshift factor is connects between the temperatures.
and it can be also evaluated to diagrammatically. So I will skip this transparency and proceed to results. So just briefly, spin degrees of freedom, you're considerate, and Raphael Porto and Ireland, you're again the first to introduce spin degrees of freedom, formalism of spin into the effective field theory approach, and they have a number of papers devoted to this subject. And we then, Mr. Prison, used this, their formalism to compute thermodynamics of caged care black hole, and Michelle also used, Michelle Levy, she's a student of Barakoa, she used this improved formalism to rederive 3PN Lagrangian for the spin-spin interaction, originally computed by Ira and Rafael Porto, and actually they were the first in the whole community of post-Newtonian approximation to evaluate, to compute the 3PN interaction Lagrangian.
The, what Michelle just said is she using the same?
She used the improved, I mean, she
the same decomposition of the metric?
Yes, yes, and it worked fine. Mm-hmm. And it's also improved the computation, made it easier. So high order post Newtonian corrections were also computed. So, for example, James Gilmore and Andreas Roth, they computed 2PN correction, first PN correction to the Einstein-Mitchell Boltzmann using this kind of decomposition, reduction over time, I mean. And so gravitational radiation in dimensional space time was computed in the framework of effective field theory approach by Dr. Cardoso, yes, Oscar Diaz, and Paul Figueres. And actually, if you use traditional GR methods, then you have to call, I mean, this kind of difficulty between, if you consider even or odd dimensions, because of, why? Because you have to evaluate your Green's functions, and so the procedure is easier in even dimensional space-time than in odd dimensional space-time. So we have some problem with odd dimensions, and using this approach of effective field theory, they just obtain the result without any complications. Now, extreme mass ratio approximations, I mean, you can consider a situation when there is one object spins around the other and its mass is much less than the mass of the other, so you again you get two scales, one is separated, namely M1 and M2, and you might wonder whether this formalism is applicable in this situation. So it is applicable, but how, whether someone implemented it. So Chad Galli and Hugh computed self-force effects in this formalism, and but they only reproduced known results. They didn't get, as far as I know, they didn't get.
So that's only first order. So
yes.
They weren't able to go to the second order.
I'm not sure. To be honest, I read their paper only briefly, so.
Well, I mean,
I'm not an expert in this, this field, but there are two terms. I mean, there is local contribution to the cell force, and there is some history contribution.
Right.
Okay? And so they computed on the local term. Okay.
And I said in different ways. Had they computed second order, everyone would. They would be famous.
Ah, really?
They would come
okay.
In working really hard.
Okay, so you have to tell me.
Well, this the impression that the rest. So I hear what the other side of the field say, right? The traditional one is that, with the exception of the spin-spin interaction, this looks like a very nice way to rediscover results that people have already obtained. They can go past what people have been able to do before, with the exception of spin-spin.
I see. Okay, I will mention. You are right, but we still, in the case of post-Newtonian approximation, we are still lacking some new results. I agree. But I believe, so say, for traditional GR people, work on this post-Newtonian approximation for decades already, and they hardly succeeded to reproduce the APN. I mean.
No, I agree. But I mean, if I were to play the devil's advocate, you see that this seems to be an amazing way to contribute things in a much better way than anything that has been taught before. Yet every time they get close to getting the next result, they move to a different problem. And so then the rest of the field is saying, okay, what's going on? So I'm just, I don't work in the post-intuitive, but that's what I see is their impression.
So you're saying though that they would care if you worked harder and you got the next order in one of these.
You beat the hell out of it. I mean he's right. The spin. These people have been working for a decade or more, and it came out. That was like the first time they did it. Depending on how you read it, and if you turn the mic or whatever off. There was some tension there, so they didn't pay attention.
Oh. See, again,
it seems kind of like on purpose that these guys had actually come up with that result. And shortly after, then they came with their own results. But yeah, so that was one example. But I mean, why don't they compute the next result? Or the same thing with this extreme mass ratio. So, on one hand, it seems like there is this amazing way of getting results more rapidly, more cleanly, but yet they don't pan out or they don't take that step. And the question is why? So,
because they're lazy particle theorists.
Probably.
Which one of those problems would be the most exciting one?
Well,
would it be the extreme mass ratio?
The extreme mass ratio, because this is something that is extremely badly needed. No one knows how to do it, so you know, Eric has been working on that.
I can raise another point.
Okay, well, I'll finish first.
Sure,
okay.
So for the spin case, like, do the results agree?
Yeah.
The triple theory and GR?
Yes. There was some tension, okay? I don't want to enter into details. But
then,
actually, yes, there is an agreement. For example, Michel computed, reproduced this result in the framework of effective field theory approach, but still using different decomposition, this Kaluza-Klein-like decomposition. And she obtained precisely the Lagrangian, which is now accepted as a correct one. Okay. But again, as to my opinion, all the credit goes to Rafael and Iran because they were the first to do this computation. Maybe they left some time stuff, but still they actually showed how to compute, and they presented a self-systematic way to compute the result, to compute this interaction. So, case black holes we were also considering, and I mentioned several works, and they recently also introduced charge into the H black holes. And James Gilmore Ross and myself, we just computed thermodynamics of charge under U1 black holes, H black holes. And some aspects, okay, I did not mention anything about RG flows, and somehow all the integrals which were presented were. Actually, these integrals are divergent, so we have to regularize them in some way. And I didn't mention it, but actually we used dimensional regularization. And in dimensional regularization, all these integrals are finite. That means there are no low divergences right now at these orders. But if you go to higher orders, then actually you get logarithmic divergences. And these logarithmic divergences are associated with classical renormalization group flow. And actually, all we know about the normalization group flow with quantum field theory can be equally well applied to the context of classical GR or classical physics in general. Also, again, Walter and Ira showed they presented some toy models and they computed several computations regarding these RG flows. We also, our last paper with James Andreas, we considered finite size operators, the influence of finite size operators on the thermodynamics of cage black holes. So, and as regards to, I have a list of open questions, but let me skip it because I'm running out of time. So, I just want to mention another problem, another open problem, which is also of interest to compute. In all this discussion, I consider only masculine, and I suppressed all the tail, which corresponds actually to tidal effects, to the formation of the world. So it is interesting to compute first, say, non-trivial coefficient, which corresponds to, say, black hole, in the simplest case, to the Schwarzschild black hole. Why it is interesting? Because this is the only way, say, if you detect some radiation of some waves from objects, from some space, sparkling objects, then actually, I think the only way to fix whether these are black holes or just two massive objects is to compare, for example, to take this finite model-dependent coefficients and to compute, say, waveforms or something like that, the dependence of waveforms on this finite size effect coefficients. Because these coefficients, these Wilsonian coefficients, are model dependent. So I guess it will be very interesting. And in fact, Damour and Poisson, they published a number of, recently they published a number of papers devoted to this finite size effect coefficients. Okay, so thank you.
So, you were talking about the cage black holes and finite sizes. So I guess the first thing is a quadrupole moment, or something.
Yes.
So at what order in your expansion?
Ah, okay. So let me show.
Or is that obvious?
Yes, it is obvious. For example, in the case of post-Newtonian approximation, it will contribute to 5 PM. I will show you now.
But that is the third term reduction, right?
Ah?
In your action, if I happen to the quadrupole
movement. They will not contribute. In my case,
in your case, it doesn't. Suppose if one wants to generalize to a more general action than Einstein inflection, then that is the third term.
Ah, you mean if you modify your gravity?
No,
original gravity, you can produce something, say, Chern Simons.
I don't know, like, what you're asking.
You're saying the first term is the mass term?
Yeah.
And then what are you thinking is the second term?
The second term is the spin term.
Oh, the spin, right.
But okay. The third term is the quadrupole term.
Right, yes.
So you say the spin comes, that's right. But in case of spin, you don't need to, the matching procedure to fix your spin is very simple. Because you can match just to known geometry, okay, to fix your parameter. But in the case of quadrupole, it's not so simple. Because in general, uniqueness theorem tells us it's only spin and charge and mass. This is enough. But when the black hole is placed in a curved background and it is deformed, then you have to, the uniqueness theorem is not useful here. So you have another set of degrees of freedom. Okay. So let me just
But my only point was that if you are considering such complex objects which are deformed, which have quadrupole moment, as what Rob is saying, then why this analysis is sufficient? We have to take a more general action.
We have to do a few more terms.
Yes.
Yeah. Terms in the effective action of the black hole.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. But as long as you consider some definite order, say 2 PM or even 3 PM, then these finite size effects will not contribute. This is what I want to show.
I agree.
Okay. So this quadrupole term has, for example, this form. Where E alpha beta actually E alpha beta is R delta X dot gamma X dot sample. And to lowest order, if you apply this kind of dimensional change of variables, it has the following form. So it is I mean, this form is much more simple. Di dj phi squared. So this is exactly what. Thanks. Okay. You know, you have to elaborate the step, but actually this is working here. Now, this means that C, since this vertex should scale as m d tau, okay? I mean, they are the same, the dimension is the same. It means that C scales as m, as m times rs 2 4, right? I mean, because we have four derivatives here, so this is a scaling of C. Okay, so the first diagram where such term contributes has the it has you see it have two legs. So this is the first diagram which contributes to your computations, and this vertex scales as m to rs over 4. Okay, so rs to the 4 will give you again. So you do integrals, but after all, it has to be. I mean, it contains m cubed rs to 4 and some definite powers of r, okay, to fix the correctly the dimensions. Okay, but to get the post-Newtonian order, you just have to take into account that all these terms scale as g m m over r. Okay, g is 1, g m squared over r, like Newtonian potential. So after all, if you take out m squared out of this coefficient, you get so it scales as m squared to r, and here you get m rs to 4, and the fixed dimensions you have to divide by r to 5. Okay, so the post-Newtonian order, so m is just like rs, we have rs to 5 over r to 5. So rs over r is your small parameter, so you get you conclude that actually this diagram contributes to 5 PM order. Okay. So yeah, as long as you are below,
that was a neat result. So the postulator people knew that the internal structure of these objects would show up at fifth post-Newtonian order.
Right. So
that
see,
one comes up very clean. Yeah, but yeah. In your closing statements, that in order to tell one object from the other one, the unfortunate thing is that. That's a fifth post-Newtonian order, but you have to include it because it's multiplying in front of it by a huge number if you're considering
okay.
The black hole versus the neutron star.
Okay, so this is why I said that actually will be this is one of the interesting problems to compute this. I mean, in effective field theory, you are everything is fine. You can compute stuff and you can leave the C as an unknown coefficient. But if you want to compare some data from detectors, then you have to tell exactly what is the C. And the C is model dependent, and you have to actually, to compute it, you have to apply matching procedure. And this matching procedure is not the most trivial thing. So this we, actually, this is kind of work in progress, and we work on it already more than 1 year. Just to collect some understanding. Okay? So this is a this is regarding the post-Newtonian order, and the same can be done in the case of cage black holes. So in case of cage black holes, the same kind of reasoning shows that finite size effects appear beyond second order in your small parameter. So this is why it makes sense to compute up to second order and to compare state to numerical results. But if you want to compute something beyond second order to and compare it with numerical same analysis, then you have to take into account these finite size terms.
So just to push maybe, so yeah, I just wanted to know where the complications go. So once you say I want to go up to this order,
whatever order
you say, okay. I pick one, I want to go up there. So in the ways to you
choose
the effective action, you put the most general terms that you can put in there, and then the complications arise. I'm trying to fix those coefficients. But then the question is, How do you know you have all the terms that you need at least one? What's the procedure of?
Okay, the only statement which we build on it is the decoupling statement in the effect in the quantum fields. If for some reason I don't believe that this will be the case, it will show that it doesn't work for GR. But we have strong evidence that it works because you compute things and you get the same results as people. Those people which did not use, which used just traditional GR techniques. So it means that.
That's fine. But when you're self-correcting yourself, checking procedure to find out, but realize that all the terms that you included all the terms in the.
So the only answer I have is that we build on this decoupling statement, and that as long as the decoupling statement is correct, this procedure is correct. And it states that the statement is that if you write down the most general expression compatible with your symmetries in the theory, then you have to account for all physics at the scale of windows.
And my question was more: is there a self, or is there independent check that you have to include it all? Because in the R one, I could say, I write all the order that I care about, all the terms that I think are correct, then from there I deduce what is a full metric and now plug it in the field equations and I check that things are correct. If I miss a term,
I throw something you don't know in language,
but I mean, is there such a thing? Could you imagine doing such a thing here? I mean, can you, once you finish this, can you recover the metric out of it?
You can recover the metric if you have this effective Lagrangian. For example, if you want to recover your Schwarzschild. Let us ask it a bit deeper. If I have this effective action, okay, which describes equally well Schwarzschild black hole, and this action contains infinite number of terms, infinite number of Wilsonian coefficients, then how comes that the uniqueness theorem is satisfied? Okay. So then I have to show you that I recover Schwarzschild metric, and these coefficients do not contribute at all. Okay, this is all I can show. So this is easy to show. I think I know how to show.
But for the Schwarzschild case, why do you imagine? Why do you expect that there will be infinite Wilson coefficient?
I do not expect. I know that
I would expect there is only one.
Yes, this is what I thought. So how come that on the one hand side?
No, but these Wilson coefficients actually capture the multiple moments of the compact object. So
yes.
For the Schwarzschild case, there are no multiple
moments. I agree. So in the bottom line, they will not contribute. This is what I want to show. But the question is a bit different. If according to your prescription, you have to write down the most, you integrate our short degrees of freedom, and you have to write down the more general stuff. So you have, in particular, you have all this tail with infinite number of Wilsonian coefficients. Then you might wonder, how comes that all this information is does not violate uniqueness theorem, which states that it is an atomic mass, as you say. Okay, this is so. I say that there is no contradiction, and I want to demonstrate it. Okay, so again, you have, after you integrated out this short degrees of freedom, you have r square root of g dv for the bulk term. For the bulk degrees of freedom on big scales, and you have this mass term, okay, and you have, let's say, let us include also this kind of quadrupole term. So I mean, e alpha beta e alpha beta c. Okay. So after reduction, you get R square root of g of gamma, I mean after reduction, I mean g goes to gamma phi, and a you don't need because c is a static problem. So you get R square root of gamma r plus some coefficient Dilaton field. Okay, I think this two. Okay, and this term is just minus m. E to phi, so we, since field are time independent, I just suppress all the time. Okay, so M to E to the phi, and this term to leading order, as I said, C, D, I, D, TGA phi square. Okay. So first of all, let us see what happens with this term, what kind of contribution to the metric it gives. Okay. So to get the metric, you have to perform variation with respect to your field. And actually, what you have to do is it can solve the equation. But instead, you can think about it in the language of diagrams. So you have to compute, say, if you want to compute phi of Schwarzschild, then you have to consider all diagrams with phi being external left. Okay? And then you just, so you compute, actually, in your action, it means that you compute that linear term in phi. And then to compute phi itself, all you need to do is just to plug plug in propagator. So if you have some linear j phi, okay, and you want to find the value of phi in field theory, you have this is, say, action contains some j phi term, and you want to compute phi somewhere. Okay, so the classical equation of motion is, say, box phi equals j. Okay, so to get phi, you just need to propagate this j, to find your propagator and to compute this stuff. Right? This is what you do. So what I suggest, I suggest to compute that whole diagram, linear term in phi in the effective action. So this will be the analog of j phi. And then to compute phi, you have to do this computation. You compute your source, and then you propagate the source to infinity and read off the value of your action. So let us see what kind of diagram. So now I want to compute only linear double diagrams, only linear term in the effective action. So I want to know what kind of term this guy contributes. So it has, this term has at least two legs. Okay? Two legs. Okay, exactly two legs. So if one leg corresponds to your phi, okay, then the other leg you have to close on your work line. So this is a contribution. So you can imagine some other peculiar contributions that you include, bulk vertices and so on, but this is the most simple. Okay? And again, this is classical diagram, because if you strip off this double line, you get just three-level diagram. So now this loop, in the case of uncompactified Schwarzschild, this loop will be, in dimensional regularization, it will be precisely zero. Why? Because this integral has the following form, 1k over k squared, okay? Now, as you see, it has dimensions, this integral, right? Now, on the other hand, there is no dimensionful parameter in the integral. So the only way, this is the only number, since you don't have dimensionful parameter in the integral, this integral is just zero. It is infinity, strictly speaking. Okay? It is infinity. But in dimensional regularization, it is just zero. In previous case, we had an extra scale L, which was associated with the size of the compact dimension. And this is why, in the case of cage black holes, compactified space, you get some number which is different from zero. But in this case, you have no scale in the integral.
Yeah, wait. So. Why? You had used that your space-time was static, so I was thinking, okay, now you're going to come up with an argument for a spherical symmetry, and therefore those C will have to be zero. But now then, why can I not have Schwarzschild plus a little bit of some waveforms going around? Would you still
but
say
but
that
I try to compute this contribution. This is a contribution. This is what okay. Because you don't want to use all the symmetry. You want to see how using just AFT approach, I get the reproduced Schwarzschild metric, and I don't get extra terms which depend on this coefficient.
Yeah, but I don't see where you're bringing the Schwarzschild. If I have Schwarzschild plus some little bit of outgoing wave, a little package of outgoing wave going through,
you can have maybe stuff, but not in this case. Because in this case, if I compute just the contribution of this C, this expression is exactly zero. If it is not zero, I want you to tell me what kind of,
But is the assumption you assume that everything is static, so doesn't that?
Yes. Yes, I assume.
Just like it eliminates spin,
yeah.
It eliminates radiation.
So this is zero for caged vacuum or uncaged?
Say it again.
So this will be non-zero for caged black holes.
Well,
is this term non-zero for caged black holes?
Non-zero caged. What do you mean non-zero?
The integral doesn't vanish when you're considering caged black
holes. Yes, because we have an extra scale inside. If you have, in the case of caged black holes, you remember this is exactly the diagram which I computed. Okay. So in the case of caged black hole, I have explicitly extra scale here. If you want extra mass, this integral is not zero if you have massive field, say m squared. Okay? This integral is not zero, it scales with m. If you look at all quantum field theory computations, all such integrals have equal to some number m to definite power. Okay? So if your m is zero, this is just zero. And it is clear this is the right way to regularize things, because if this integral has dimensions and there is no dimensionful parameter inside, this is just has to be zero. If you want to regularize the theory, or infinity, if you put here sharp cutoff, you get some power of this cutoff. But this is, if you want, the miracle.
So the coefficient for the C2 will be non-zero.
C2?
So
the contribution, this is what I say, that if I want to, I have to show yet how to get to reproduce Schwarzschild metric, but if I try to compute something, the contribution from this theorem, or other terms with more legs, okay, and these other terms will include more legs, then some legs I have to close on the verb line. Okay, and when I close these legs on the verb line, these loops just vanish, or if you use dimensional regularization. Okay, so these terms will not contribute. And okay, the only term which will contribute is just this term, because it has m phi, see? It has also m phi square again will be zero. But m phi will contribute, so you have to... So for example, the leading result is this one. Okay. If you want, I want to compute now phi of Schwarzschild. Okay, so the leading result is just you put here your m0, okay, and you plug here your propagator to infinity, we expect to be far enough from the black hole, and you compute this diagram with propagator here, and you reproduce just the standard term gm over r. Okay? Now, second contribution, okay, in the form. Okay, this is another contribution to the value of the Schwarzschild black holes. Again, this is classical diagram. If you strip off, you get just three-level diagram. Now, this vertex you get from the expansion. You see, the vertex is quadratic in phi, and extra gamma you get, you contract indices with gamma. So when you expand, you get gamma phi phi. So this vertex is, I obtained from here. And this vertex, again, the same.
Why can't C contribute?
Huh?
C also contribute, or the quad, what is it, quadruple term also contributes vertices like that. No?
Like that?
Yeah.
No, but they are all sitting on the verb line, right? I mean, this is not in the bulk, this is on the verb line.
Oh, it's in the, right, yeah.
And this is from the bulk.
Okay.
So if these terms, again, you will get all kind of terms with maybe many legs, okay? But still, and all of them you have to close on the verb line without quantum loops, okay? So after all, you will get zero always. And this is why this, uniqueness theory and effective field theory prescription agree. And there is no contradiction, everything is fine. So if I compute these three-level diagrams with one external leg phi, I will reproduce Schwarzschild metric. Okay. So it reproduces Schwarzschild, but perturbatively. I mean, you reproduce your Schwarzschild metric at asymptotic infinity, term by term. Okay, because you have to affect the field theory.
Okay. I have
this is expansion of your Schwarzschild.
Yeah. So, like, can one pose a similar question for the current black hole? So,
for the
which one? For
yes.
Because like, for that we will have And one term in the effective action.
Yes, so then, exactly. You are right.
No, but let me finish. Yes. So there will be this S mu nu term.
Yes.
Right? With the dipole term, with the Riemann curvature.
Yes.
Or with the Christoffelsen one in the action. And then we know, like, classically it gives us proper Pethrou equation for spinning particles. If you treat as curve as you treat Schwarzschild as a test particle in the background. So can one reproduce Paul Pethrou equation using field theory?
Equation for the Schwarzschild?
Equation for the curve in the background.
For the curve in the background? Okay. If you consider curve in the background, okay, first of all, how we introduce spin? Okay, there is long story how to do it exactly. So Raphael, for example, explains how to do it. But the bottom line, extra term which you get into your action. First of all, A is not vanishing anymore because this problem is stationary. It's stationary but not static. So there is no thing that equals to minus T. So you get extra A. Okay? So, and spin, degrees of freedom, namely J and J. Okay? This is your spin. In this formalism is coupled to Fij. Okay? Fij is... field strength tensor for A. Okay. So this is a way to couple spin. It can sound. This is a way to couple spin to your method. Okay. Then in particular, you can now derive your Kerr method. Okay. Again, please note that this F again is linear in your field, and no, it doesn't have two legs, something like that. So since it is linear, it will contribute. So, because it is linear in your field, you can construct all kinds of diagrams, okay, which contribute to the method which are non-vanishing. Okay. So, and this is a way to do it so consistently, and you can get Kerr method. Now, if you want to introduce background field, for example, then all you need to do at this level is just to substitute phi goes to phi, which is a perturbation around the background, plus your background phi bar field, just like you do it in standard quantum fields. Okay. So, and then again, you can do it. So, this is actually the key how to extract if you want this Wilsonian coefficient. What do I mean by that? This is what we are doing, actually. We introduce the background in this way. Okay, so if you consider your di, dj, phi squared, and you want to this term to contribute to your asymptotic value of the net, then once you decompose, make this decomposition, this term becomes c, di, dj, in particular, phi, times di, dj of your background field. So this is just some given number. Say if you put your black hole in the quadrupole background, this is just number quadrupole. And now it becomes linear in your phi. So it will contribute, this term now will contribute to the asymptotic value of the asymptotic value of the metric. And but it recalls that this phi is just perturbations, okay, above your background. So, but you know, there are some equations such as Zerilli, Reggivilli, which exactly give you and these equations correspond to their solutions, correspond to the values of perturbations around your background. So once you do some computation on the effective field theory side, namely once you compute your perturbation on the effective field theory side, you can solve afterwards the equations of Zerilli or Reggivilli, and then you just have to compare. This computation is the exact computation on the full series. This gives you the mentioned procedure. This has to fix this coefficient. And this is what we do. This is work in progress, but there are some subtleties. I mean, the procedure is clear, but when you start to compute, there are still some subtleties to overcome.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Let's thank her.